And we're live. It's a Semi-Americans podcast in association with the Get Fact ET program. I hope that you all enjoy this. I have a very special guest today, Dr. Simon Tesfamariam. I'm sure you all have heard of him. He's a brilliant young man who is stationed out in New York City. He's going to have a lot to discuss with us today, and I look forward to speaking with him. Simon, please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Oh, great to be on. I really appreciate you inviting me. I am, like you said, Simon Tesfamariam, and I am the executive director of the New Africa Institute. And I live out here in New York, and basically, have been trying to bridge together all these different struggles on the African continent and providing the research basis behind that. And like you, also have a background in medicine and healthcare. And so really looking forward to the discussion today.
Thank you, man. Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. Always important to connect with people that, you know, are fighting the good fight. You know what I mean? Before we get started, yeah, thank you for giving us a bit of an intro, a bit of a background. I also want to give shout outs to Get Fact ET. A couple people that are involved in furthering the No More movement, like Magdessa Safa on Twitter, Adis Kine, Jamal Countess, Jeff Pierce, Simo Parvinyanian, Rania Kalek, Eugene Perrier. All of you, we appreciate all the good work that you all put in. And there's, of course, countless others, hundreds of thousands, millions of people that are doing their part as well. Shout outs to everybody, all of Africa, really. Shout outs to all of you. So to kind of get started, I wanted to first ask you, how did you get involved in movements that would, you know, that would be centered on advancing and helping the progress of Eritrea and Ethiopia? I mean, I know you're Eritrean, but, you know, one cause affects all of us, really, right? So whether you're Eritrean, Somalian, or Ethiopian, it's all kind of, and other parts of Africa too, really. When one is affected, all of us is affected.
Most def. So really my organizational background goes back to 18, 19 years old when I was just going into college. And I got really curious about what I was reading in the news with when it comes to Eritrea, just because there was all this stuff about like Eritrea's government, like being like vilified and being like a dictator and, you know, the president of Eritrea. And then, the leadership was leading the country in the wrong direction and all this kind of stuff. This is like right after the war with Ethiopia that lasted years. So, I was just curious, started asking questions and just realized that I wasn't getting the responses I needed from my own community. So I started doing a lot of reading myself. Mm-hmm. And doing the reading and then being connected to family back home and knowing what was actually going on the ground, I saw the disparity between the media and what my own people were saying. And just like we're seeing today, mm-hmm. over this past year with all the propaganda, I was noticing it then. And then, that then led me to be like, okay, we need to, we're living in this like mafia-like world where the United States is like the boss and the bully and pushing countries around, and they're connected. Like the ruling classes are like a mafia. So I said, okay, I know my family, my Eritrean people are my family. We need to get together. We need to be strong to protect ourselves from this. You start with what you know. And so that was Eritrea for me. And then in Seattle, where I was based at the time, we started some youth groups, and then they got a little bit more political, where we had like groups that were more militantly fighting with imperialism, and we were naturally connecting with like black progressive groups and anti-war type groups. And then like I myself living in Seattle, there's a huge Somali and Ethiopian population. So, a lot of my friends were Somali, Ethiopians, Eritreans, and just had a familiarity with that. But like at the time it was hard to really connect politically with Ethiopians. Mm-hmm. And Somalis because of what TPLF was doing, to keep us all divided and apart, whether it's through ethnic federalism back in Ethiopia or the vilification of Eritrean leaders and saying, like, you know, there was a pointless war over Bademe, but it was a lot more complex than that. And they framed it like that. And I don't mean TPLF, but the international media, so as to make it such that, you know, it looked like TPLF and PFDJ, the two governments in Eritrea and Ethiopia, were basically in this conspiracy to carve up all the resources of the region for themselves, and that they were just power hungry type leaders that were trying to do this. And so this was like a very, you know, ridiculous conspiracy theory, but a lot of people bought it. I will tell you, a lot of Ethiopians bought it, some Eritreans bought it. And we felt as though like it was hard for us to come together. Just seeing that, you know, TPLF had the power of all the media in the world backing it. And so it really, you know, served to isolate the Eritrean people from the rest of Africa. But as Ethiopians continue to struggle and to fight, you know, whether it's the 2005 elections, 2010 elections, 2015 elections, the large Muslim protests, you know, the huge Oromo protests, Amhara protests, collective Ethiopian protests where, you know, everybody was basically wanting to get TPLF out. And that obviously happened in 2018. And then there was peace. Everyone was like, you know, what was this stupid, all this whole time that we were all divided, you know, this was unnecessary. And Ethiopians started to see Eritrea in a positive light, and Eritreans started to see Ethiopia in a positive light. I hope I said that correctly. Maybe it's late. We had a little bit more harmony and more peace. And so we were able to connect with other Ethiopian activists, being, maybe I don't like using the term activist, organizer, I should say. And so when the recent war happened last year, initiated on November 4th, basically all the lies, all the conspiracies were exposed. Everybody saw that Eritreans were fighting for Ethiopian sovereignty and pushing for the defense of Ethiopia because it was fighting an African war. It was fighting in defense of Africa. And it was a proud moment for Eritreans by extension to see Ethiopians standing on their two feet and getting rid of this puppet of empire. And so naturally, Ethiopians or Eritreans and Ethiopians were working together. And so we can talk a lot more about that. But that's kind of like my history and how I got connected with all the different, you know, Ethiopians, Eritreans, Somalis, and other groups now.
Yeah, the importance of unity. I think that's like the highlight of this. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I think that really stands the test of time. Now this is big movement, right? The No More movement. It's amazing how much of a global reach the No More movement has, you know, created and produced. It's not just in the States. You see people saying no more in Europe, in Ethiopia, in Eritrea. It's amazing what kind of impact it's had. It's a fun thing to say. It's catchy. It's really catchy. But what is the meaning behind it? What is no more? No more what? That's kind of like the question that people sometimes have, is no more in reference to what?
Well, really with no more, it was to commemorate a year of like struggle, really against TPLF and their backers, the Western powers that were basically promoting war and suffering in the Horn of Africa and challenging Ethiopian and Eritrean sovereignty. And so we saw all the lies. So we're also saying no more to disinformation. And we also saw the sanctions. We were saying no to sanctions. And no just to this general assault on Africa, you know. And so it was really a feeling that we had to promote a campaign that was going to pick up, because we knew that over this past year that they were saying that there was a genocide going on in Tigray, and people were coalescing around the Tigray genocide hashtag, and that they were going to be starting their own campaign on November 4th. And so to beat them to the punch, because these people are not in favor of truth. And when I say these people, I mean TPLF. We decided to initiate on November 1st a month-long campaign to say no more to all this stuff. And what ended up happening was that it honestly exceeded my wildest expectations, and it's become a global movement. And you know, and right now it's just growing and growing and growing, and you know, in various pockets of the world that I did not anticipate. And so it's become a phenomenon, honestly. So that's kind of the basis of the movement.
Yeah. So naturally, my next question would be, how can people get involved with the No More movement? What kinds of, you know, opportunities are present for someone who, one, may not be as entrenched in the matters, in the political side of things, but would still like to get involved? What are the means to do that?
This was initiated, No More, I mean, was initiated as just a simple campaign, as I mentioned early on. There was no intention of creating a movement. It was more to just rally support in this like month-long campaign. Right. But what we noticed was the unbelievable level of disinformation and, you know, hostility, to the point where they're saying that the Addis Ababa was going to be captured, that TPLF was on the outskirts, was so bold and so provocative that it pissed off the people on the streets of Addis enough to get, you know, almost 500,000 to 1 million people, whatever the number was, like in the streets, you know, demonstrating and holding up No More signs. And then that inspired brothers and sisters on the outside in the diaspora to have a counter or to have a parallel demonstration just a day or two later. And then seeing how effective that was and how popular No More was to get people on the streets, we said, hey, okay, let's organize another you know, global demonstration. And on the 21st of November, huge number of people came out onto the streets. So when we saw that, we said, oh my goodness, this thing is a movement. It's a genuine social movement. Everyone was saying No More. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee was even trolling us, you know, saying do more. And then saying that they were going to go after diaspora activists and making threats. And then you have like, you know, folks like Cameron Hudson of the CIA and the Atlantic Council saying, you know, also trolling. And so what we saw is like, it was getting attention, and that we were not chasing Tigray genocide hashtag folks. They were chasing us. They were trying to stop No More. And so it was a genuine social movement. And so what then happened is that a lot of questions like you just asked right now, how do I, as an individual, get more involved in this kind of thing? And it was sort of overwhelming. And just as we were starting to get kind of things figured out, you know, the few of us who had been like, you know, it's a movement of a lot of people, but the, you know, those of us who had been holding up the signs early on and saying No More, initiating the campaign, were kind of figuring out how to do that. And as that happened, what did they do? Twitter censors us and shuts us down. And we had been organizing around the Horn of Africa hub. And so that was a Twitter account handle that was taken down. My personal account was taken down. Actually, all my accounts were taken down. So they blocked me as like a human being, as a person, so that I wouldn't have a voice, to make it narrower, because I'm an Eritrean and there were a couple of, you know, other Ethiopians on there, very visible. So to make it more insular and closed off, to be just like an Ethiopian thing, when Ethiopians at this time need global support, need African support. And so that was also, in my opinion, very strategic. So I say all of this just to indicate that, like, as it became an unexpected large social movement, and we were just trying to figure out how to incorporate more minds, more peoples, you know, youth and all that kind of stuff, they took down some accounts. And so in response, we started another account.
And you said myself. They took down accounts. Sorry, Simon. I'm not trying to interrupt your flow of thought, but when you say they, you're talking about Twitter?
Twitter. And I'm not saying me as in I started this account, because I had no hand in starting this other account, but No More activists started the No More hub handle on Twitter.
Right.
To get things going again. So what they did is they turned something that was Horn of Africa into literally a global movement by doing that. So we should be thanking them actually for taking down Horn of Africa hub. And so where people can go to get information about what's going on in this movement is to go there. Website mm-hmm. is in the pipeline. Everybody's going to have to exercise just a little bit of patience. We as individuals are also very accessible, relatively, I would say. I know folks like Harmela Aragawi, Nabi Asafa, and others, including myself. Mm-hmm. You know how you got in contact with me. I'm accessible. Yeah. Others are accessible. But getting in contact with that account is one way. And then also, I just want everybody to understand that there are things in the pipeline. It's the holiday mm-hmm. season right now. Accounts were taken down. There was censorship, but mm-hmm. everything will be a little bit clearer in the coming days and weeks.
Okay. Yeah, we can leave it there. Now, look, you just mentioned something that has been bothering a lot of people, has been frustrating a lot of people, and it's this silencing of pro-Ethiopian/Eritrean/ African voices that are calling out this double standard of the U.S. and European nations when it comes to matters concerning Africa. We're not seeing so much silencing of the voices that may be calling for violence, right, for like the pro-TPLF side. In fact, Getachew Reda still has a Twitter that's functioning, which is really interesting because imagine Osama bin Laden having a Twitter back in the day and kind of stating, hey, this is how we're going to attack, this is what we're going to do, but that's okay on Twitter standards, which is quite interesting, to say the least. This double standard that is present here, what do you make of that?
I think this double standard that we're seeing on Twitter mm-hmm. is a double standard that exists in just the physical and digital world more broadly outside of Twitter. We've seen unbelievable level of political support, diplomatic support, diplomatic cover, media cover for TPLF to tip the balance of the war in favor of TPLF. And this mm-hmm. is coming from Western powers because mm-hmm. TPLF is a Western stooge, a puppet. I could use a lot of choice words to describe them. We're not going to go there. But my point is that they have chosen to be the puppets of the United States. And because of that, they're given this cover. So with Twitter, what they've done is they've actually verified Getachew Reda, TPLF spokesperson, while he was in the bushes. Yeah. While he was in the bushes. You know, he's a rebel leader and he's a tier three. He's a tier three terrorist organization leader, according to the Department of Homeland Security. You know, they're classified as tier three terrorists. So it's shocking to everyone that they just openly let these people have platforms and a voice. Mm-hmm. And he's calling for the shelling of Dese and Kombolcha, openly, and saying that we're going to mop up Tigray and go to Addis and go to Asmara, which is a violation of the Geneva Convention. Mm-hmm. So,
I guess not Twitter policy, though, right?
You know, that's the thing. It's just like it's so brazenly like. A disregard of international law, and Twitter seems totally unaccountable by anyone. And so it's just not a fair battlefield. And so we've got to tip the balance in favor of the people. And we have to do that, not just through what we do on Twitter, but in the physical world by mobilizing on the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. This next question is kind of, it's related to this, and it's, what did the TPLF do that really allowed their disinformation to be narrated as the truth, right? Because I've myself had conversations with many people that aren't African, where, come across this hashtag that was started, the Tigray genocide hashtag, which was fabricated. They took it to mean, oh, there's a genocide going on, and the thought is usually, oh, it's an African country. They get this sense of this happens all the time. This is what government, their African governments do, and yada, yada, yada. But the TPLF has been very effective to get that lie and help spread it for so long. But, you know, every lie we tell incurs a debt to the truth, and they've been effective at it. And what are the ways that this propaganda has been able to spread so freely? And you kind of mentioned the silencing of voices that are, you know, pro Ethiopia, pro Eritrea, pro Somalia, pro Africa. But the TPLF has still managed to have somewhat success with their lies.
Well, you know, they were in power for 30 years. And during that period when they were in power, mm-hmm. they had basically infiltrated and focused on propaganda in order to strengthen their position, and then also make it such that it would be hard to remove them, even in a guerrilla warfare or you know, wartime scenario, after their removal of power. So we're seeing how, like, people like Tedros Adhanom and others, you know, just, I mean, you just go down the list, different UN agencies, mm-hmm. media organizations, you know, just all these different outlets of power in the world are dominated by these TPLF plants. And then even in society, they mm-hmm. install these like sleeper cells, you know. Mm-hmm. They're truly a diabolical type of organization, to use the words of Jamal Countess, which I really believe is accurate in describing mm-hmm. TPLF. They have this like a long-term agenda that they had been plotting to just mm-hmm. like essentially stab everyone in the back for their own selfish, narrow aims of creating, you know, their own little fiefdom, ethnic fiefdom, you know, against the wishes of, you know, all Africans in the region. And so the way they forward their propaganda is by using these networks, you know, that mm-hmm. they've created over the years, a disinformation network where you mm-hmm. have these, like, you know, Martin Plouts and these Rashid Abdis and William Davisons and, you know, Patrick Gilks. I mean, we can mm-hmm. name a lot of even the unknown names, but they're mm-hmm. everywhere. And Eritreans, mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie, just being an Eritrean, for so many years, we've become experts with these folks because of the fact that they used to go after Eritrea so hard. Mm-hmm. People might get surprised, actually, that during the Eritrean struggle, there was, you know, Dan Connell, Martin Plout, Alex DeWall. These were, I mean, I'll just go down the list. They were buddies of, mm-hmm. they were like friends of EPLF. They tried mm-hmm. they tried to be friends of EPLF. Mm-hmm. And unlike TPLF, Eritrea never took the bait. You know, these folks were seen as like CIA. They were seen mm-hmm. as intelligence agencies. And we know now that the CIA tried to infiltrate, to try to support TPLF. They tried to support EPLF to weaken the Ethiopian government at that time. Now, whereas Eritrean had its own independence agenda, and it was very clear and principled. It was, you know, we want independence, we want this and that. Think what you will of that, but it was principled. It was like, that was the goal. With TPLF, they had this like secret agenda that wasn't open. And what they did was they took the bait with the folks like Alex DeWalls and the Martin Plouts and all of them. And so over time, we saw that they, these folks started attacking the government of Eritrea and then siding with TPLF and then supporting them, becoming the experts, creating the narratives, the disinformation networks and all that stuff. And so today you have this like, you know, these like very, you know, long time sort of experts that are there just to support TPLF until like they're literally their death or final surrender.
What kind of effective ways, and you've kind of mentioned a few of these already, but what kind of effective ways are there to reverse these false narratives? And obviously, one way is by speaking the truth, right? Spreading true information and countering the disinformation. I feel like there's a lot of, in the movements that are pro-Africa, pro-Ethiopia, pro, you know, there's a lot of defense that's being played, because there'll be a false claim out there. There might be a news article. And then it's, oh, let me tell you why these things are not true. And now I think there's a shift where we're more so on offense and we're providing truthful information and disproving false information before it even gets out at times. Are those kind of like, do you have any other thoughts on that? Any other things that we could do better or try to do more of?
Yeah. So first of all, one of my favorite chants when I go to demonstrations in the streets, I've been, you know, demonstrating in different struggles for quite mm-hmm. some time now, you know, not just no more. And, you know, a very common chant is the people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. And I truly yep. believe that. And the thing is what we've done is we've united the horn. We've worked to unite the horn. And by doing that, we've created a situation where they have to respond to us because that's 140 million people that they're mm-hmm. going to have to go against. And mm-hmm. then we want to make that 1.3 billion people on the entire African continent. Mm-hmm. So if they think they can just roll over Ethiopia or roll over Eritrea, whatever country they target, will create the most devastating nightmare in their lives. And to make sure that they don't just do that, that it'll be impossible. It'll be the end of empire. Mm-hmm. So that instead of disrespecting us, and it's not about pride. When we say mm-hmm. respect, it's about just when you fear someone, you don't want to like cross them so that you don't just, you know, a bully. Right. You know, sometimes you have to punch back so that they don't, you know, come back and try and punch you back, you know. So in a similar way, you look at China in the 70s with Nixon. Mm-hmm. And Kissinger, they had to go to China because they realized that, oh man, this is a power that we have to respect. And what that then did is it led to a negotiation, a deal mm-hmm. that eventually led to, you know, respect for China's sovereignty and allowing China to have an accelerated form of development. Mm-hmm. Yes, part of that was due to the fact that they were trying to isolate the Soviet Union. But still, you know, it was something that they were able to do because of the fact that they realized the power of China. And they haven't done that with Africa yet. And, you know, obviously, Africa is, you know, based colonialism to a degree where, you know, a lot of countries, you know, so many countries that have artificially created borders because of colonialism. And so, you know, there's been conflicts and all this stuff. But basically, my point is, just to shorten it, is that these countries, they have to come together. They have to create a global movement. And no more should envision itself as a force that brings these different forces together. When they want to do something, they see the entire 1.3 billion people and then back off. And so that's the hope. No more needs to be a truly Pan-African movement and then include the African diaspora and then include the progressive peoples and all exploited peoples of the world.
We've had talks before this, of course. And I think, you know, last time we were speaking, there's frustration, I think, expressed on both of our sides about the way that, for example, the U.S. is approaching the conflict that's going on, right? And I used to think it was an information problem. And what I'm realizing is that it's not so much ignorance. You know, there's a saying that ignorance matured is arrogance. And I think we're starting to realize that it's arrogance. And by that, I mean, there's this thought of, oh, you know, why doesn't the Ethiopian government and why don't the Ethiopian people just have a meeting and discuss a ceasefire and have, you know, peace talks, right? And I think when they say that, it's disrespectful to the, you know, hundreds of thousands of people and now up to millions of people that have been internally displaced, the thousands of people that have been killed, and, you know, the genocide of the Ethiopian people that's been going on. I think it's quite disrespectful to say, oh, just have a sit down and talk this over and everything will be all right, especially when the TPLF has made it known since the beginning of this whole conflict that their intended mission is to destroy Ethiopia, right? It's on video. They've been very bold about it. They've told us how they're gonna, you know, march all the way to Addis. We see how that's going. Now, all of a sudden, that things aren't going so well for the TPLF. There's all this talk about doing a peace deal. Oh, we'll withdraw our forces from the neighboring regions that we unjustly invaded. But in all of this, Simon, there needs to be accountability. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's the way that I think millions of Ethiopians have expressed that they do not want to see a sit-down ceasefire talk. If it means that there's peace momentarily, and then the TPLF just regains their strength and tries to do this again and again and again, because as they've stated, we will not stop. So that's kind of the frustration and the difficulty that I've been finding as far as the U.S. and, you know, the European, the U.N. approach to what's going on.
Yeah, I think, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And mm-hmm. I really do believe that we have a history when it comes to TPLF. We know that they don't respect agreements. We know the United States doesn't respect agreements. If you see the deal with Iran, like, they don't respect mm-hmm. that at all. They've lost any bit of credibility, any like inkling of credibility that they have left what they've been doing in the latest stages of their empire. And so what we know now is, like, we can't be suckers. You know, mm-hmm. we have to see them for who they are. And I think this is one of the things that with, like, Eritrea, I think we've kind of had for a while because of the fact that, you know, it's been a strong, stable government, because of the fact that, you know, we didn't have a TPLF to weaken us and divide us and all that kind of stuff. So we could see through all this propaganda. And I'll tell you, like, they did get us. They did fool us. The 2000 Algiers agreement, we signed that, and they basically created a quote unquote no peace, no war situation that drained the Eritrean economy, held, or at least attempted to hold, the country hostage and attempted to isolate it from the world. They did make some gains, and they did weaken Eritrea in its development. They hindered it. But had we not, negotiated at all, maybe Eritrea would have been better off, you know. But things happen for a reason. And, you know, what happened is that was a learning lesson. And we now know that TPLF is just it doesn't have, any bit of credibility in any negotiation. So we just have to see this as, like, a military solution is the most likely solution for lasting peace in the Horn of Africa. In the same way that, you know, when you look at ISIS, you know, when they're beheading individuals and doing these insane things that just doesn't look like a moral force, a godly type entity at all, you start thinking, like, this has to be eradicated. This type of thinking has to be eradicated. This is a danger for the planet. TPLF is a danger for the planet because their ambitions are so dangerous. And if they, make good on their goals, what does it mean for the rest of Africa? Ethnic fiefdoms all over Africa, little Bantustans, and then war and chaos and all this kind of stuff. So we have to finish the job. The mm-hmm. job needs to be finished. And so, no matter how much pressure they put on you, no matter how much they say, you know, it sounds all good when they're like, oh, you need a political solution. Both sides need to come to the table. You act like we didn't back off in June and call for a ceasefire and for the sake of the people and for mm-hmm. the sake of peace. Mm-hmm. Yet they said, we're going to go to Addis, we're going to go to Asmara, we're going to mop up all those people, you know, who sided with the government. So that is what I believe we need to just finish.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think we both see eye to eye on that. Is just the frustration comes from people that may not fully understand what's going on. Peace is great. It is. Peace is great. But, you know, like everything else, it definitely, there's context to it. If one side is just doing a fake peace agreement, meaning the TPLF, then ultimately the end goal isn't achieved. And the end goal is to have success for all Ethiopians, no matter what their ethnicity is. I don't care if you're Amhara, Oromo, you know, Tigre, if you're from Wollo. I'll name all the provinces if necessary, but really, if your ethnicity shouldn't matter, everyone should be able to live together and move towards peace. And that goes outside of Ethiopia as well, to all the other countries in Africa. Another question, and this is also, you know, it's a bit of a sensitive subject. There are people that, and the way that TPLF, of course, has also been able to gain support in the Tigray region is forcefully, right? They will say, if, you know, we're the only ones here for you, to the people of Tigray, and say, if the national government, you know, retakes Mekelle or retakes the region, then, you know, they're going to kill you. They're going to murder you. They're going to torture you, blah, blah, blah. And I think there needs to be an understanding that TPLF is separate, of course, from Tigrayans. So my question is kind of related to that. How much leverage do Tigrinya-speaking Eritreans have in raising awareness amongst Tigrayans who are victims of the propaganda machine that is the TPLF, in lieu of showing solidarity with innocent Tigrayan civilians?
Honestly, when we're talking about like the future of Ethiopia and the reconciling of all the different forces, as you just previously mentioned in your comment about, like, you know, whatever language, whatever peoples you are, you know, you've got to learn to live in peace. Each group has to overcome these last 30 years, the backwardness that was instilled in the country. And not only, it's not just these 30 years. It's actually, it goes back, you know, really to the founding of the modern era, you know, the modern Ethiopian state, where, you know, there were groups that had legitimate grievances and were marginalized and will need to have their voices heard. So reconciliation is a very holistic process that goes back far. And so within that framework, when we look at Tagaru, you know, they are like all the other groups. They are peoples who are at one point were victimized and who have grievances that needed to be addressed. Unfortunately, TPLF hijacked that process and basically became a greedy, corrupt force that did not have the moral authority or the ideology to solve that problem for the people. And it chose force and it chose deception to do that. So what's going to have to happen is that this is not something that the Eritrean Tigrinya-speaking people can solve on behalf of the Tigrayan people. The Tagaru will have to look within themselves to solve this problem. The same thing goes for the Amaras or the Oromos or the Somalis or whoever. They're going to have to find the progressives, the Democrats, or whoever are those ones that are thinking, you know, in terms of Ethiopia, thinking in terms of Africa, thinking in terms of, you know, the world and humanity, and wanting to make everybody live in harmony and peace. Those type of people, those big thinkers, they're the ones that are going to have to rise within each of these different ethnic groups and become the ones that lead the charge for reconciling the Ethiopian state. And so all these tendencies that go in the other direction towards this like rightist, more like, you may hear this from like one group, my ethnicity first, right? I'm not, as an Eritrean, it's not my job to comment on that. This is for the peoples of that ethnic group alone to say whether that's wrong or right. But in my history, I mean, no matter where you go in the world, when people say my group first, it's very political. Like if I say Eritrea first, usually like that's not going to end well. Like, because it's not that I don't put Eritrea's like interest, you know, like very high on the list and say maybe even number one, but it's more about like what I'm trying to convey. It's like a battle cry for like, let's go. Eritrea is like the number one country ever. The greatest is that. And, you know, you can believe all that stuff, but my point is just, it sends the wrong kind of message, I think, to the base. And so we need people that think like more in terms of harmony, peace, development, and just want these simple things that like 99% of people want. And so, and so if we're going to say, if there is some leverage though, just if there's one form of leverage that Tigrinya-speaking Eritreans can provide, it's in this war where, you know, those who are speaking Tigrinya are speaking one language, one way to their own people, but then speaking an entirely different language to the Ethiopian people. So like maybe in Amharinya, they're saying something different. So mm-hmm. we can keep them honest, that you can keep TPLF honest, and we can say, hey, no, you said this. And mm-hmm. so that's maybe one form of leverage that we have, is just helping the Ethiopian people see through TPLF, because we can decode the lies. So mm-hmm. that's my take.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That was a profound take. I appreciate you answering that. I know that that's not necessarily a very common question, but we felt like we should probably address it with regards to this movement. So just to wrap things up here, the No More movement, what lies ahead in the future? What can we expect? I know there's certain things that you've already mentioned that are, you can't telegraph everything that you're going to do. But this is something that we're both involved in at this point, along with millions of other people. What can we expect as like the main goals? Where are we headed?
So I think, No More is, to me, is getting to that level of like R word, where we can start talking about revolutionary ideas and mm-hmm. revolutionary thinking and revolutionary actions, where we're trying to transcend and totally change a system. And on the African continent, the system has been one of exploitation. Mm-hmm. And so now we need to transcend into that revolutionary category, where a social mm-hmm. movement becomes a revolutionary movement. Mm-hmm. And that means not just saying no more to imperialism, no more to disinformation, no more to division. We also have to talk about the internal stuff, because those are the external,
Mm-hmm.
So no more to this old way of doing things. We're living in a modern world where community centers are organized a certain way in the diaspora, mm-hmm. Governments are organized a certain way, but we're living in a world where social media, the internet, blockchain, and all these kinds of things are kind of taking over, 5G technology or whatever. And so young people are best equipped for this, and they understand these sorts of things. And so we need young people to rise, and it's like the old Max Planck quote. I can't exactly remember what it is, but basically the idea is that new ideas like really can't move forward until like the old generation of like scientists or whatever, like die basically, like mm-hmm. literally die. Like, and so, the thing is like, there's just a certain way of doing things at the local, at the international, at the national level, whatever, you can cite your own community center, you can cite your mm-hmm. own country or whatever, where things are done, where young people are going to have to take over, and that baton is going to have to be transferred. And sometimes mm-hmm. you just can't ask permission. You just got to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think like No More is basically saying like, we're just going to do it. And it has to continue down that path and not ask for the baton to be passed, but just do it themselves. And mm-hmm. that to me is saying no more to the old way, not, totally getting rid of the elders, respecting them, understanding what they've done and their contributions and getting continuous advice from them. But, but understanding that like, it's now our time. So I think that's the future of No More. I think everyone should not feel as though there's one group of people that have ownership. This is, I like to describe it as like a spring from which we all drink, mm-hmm. where whatever it is that we have, we can, grow the movement. So if you're doing media work right here, right now, right? Mm-hmm. podcasting, and we want to grow this, we want to make this a success because you have a voice that's important. But if we focus on growing the movement, the mm-hmm. movement becomes strong. And so this podcast, by extension, can drink from the movement. It has a whole group of people to tap into mm-hmm. and can make this platform more powerful. And everybody has their own initiative. And we want everybody who has a good agenda, who's tapped into No More, to forward that good agenda, that positive agenda that they have mm-hmm. through the No More movement. And so that's the way I envision this thing going. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone should be excited.
My man. All right. Yeah, I mean, what better way to end this episode? I want to thank Dr. Simon Tesfamariam for making the time, for, you know, going in depth as far as his answers. You know, he wasn't giving us any superficial answers, so we really appreciate that. And covering some, you know, incredibly important topics to so many people. You know, so I really look forward to feedback as far as this episode is concerned. Please reach out to us. There are further topics that you would like for us to discuss in the future as well. I'm sure this won't be the last time we talk, Simon. You know, please do let us know, and thank you for listening. Any last words that you want to say before we sign off here?
Just, you know, I want to say to your show, it's an amazing show, you know, just keep it going. You're doing excellent work. I know I've seen you in the streets, and I hope your listeners follow in your path and continue to do, you know, what you're doing and take it to a higher level. And so keep up the great work, all your listeners. You know, keep it up, and let's make no more a revolution.
Yeah, no doubt. And we're signing off. This is the Semi-Americans podcast in collaboration with Get Fact ET. And thank you for joining us.